Let's turn our Bibles together to the book of Numbers, chapter 26. Numbers, chapter 26. And we've come to a place that may seem like it's repetitive, but it really isn't. You see, in Numbers chapter 26, one of the reasons that we like to call it the book of Numbers is because there's two censuses that are taking place. In the beginning of the book, there's a census taking place, and now in chapter 26, there's another census that's taking place. Why are there two of these numbering of the people taking place? Well, the first one was to just assemble the people into an organized group as they were placed in their tribes, and their tribes were set up and they were organized because they were marching out of Egypt toward the promised land. And so there was an organization to all of this. This time, there's really two reasons for the census. Actually, three. The first one is all the people that were of the age of 20, all the men of the age of 20 and above that were during the first census have all died because of rebellious acts. So now we have a new group that are going in. So that's another reason. So we have a new group. So now we need to take a census again to find out this time for two things besides the death. Number one, to get organized militarily because they're about to take the promised land. And they don't just walk in. And so they need to know what's their strength militarily. But secondly, not only are they going to take the promised land, but they're going to distribute the land amongst the people. So in order to know, and we'll get to that, that's what's going on with these census. But also, these are new people in many ways. These are people that some of them were born during the previous 38-year period. Some of them were little tykes who, well, saw those guys that were 20 and above are no longer there. And so there's a lot of repetitive things that we're looking at tonight by way of reminder, but it's really new for them. Does that make sense as to where we're going? So it came to pass after the plague, which we learned about last week, and Pastor Rick kind of finished up our time with Balaam. What an interesting person, isn't he? He's just really a mystery in the Bible. And then after that, he said, you know, I really can't curse God's people. But I tell you what you can do, you can seduce God's people. And so we had that seduction by the Midianites, and then a plague came in, and Phinehas kind of drove home the point with a couple that was having improper relationships, and so there's all these kinds of things happening. And so that's concluded, but now they're getting ready to move forward into the promised land. So came to pass after that plague I just talked about that the Lord spoke to Moses and Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest. Now God is spreading out even his communication. Now he's talking not just to Moses, but to who? Eleazar. Why is he? Because he's the next priest. His father was Aaron, the older brother of Moses, who passed away. And I love the phrase, and we'll see it again tonight, that Aaron, he went to be with his people, or he was gathered with his people. What a great description of life after our days here on earth. That we're going to be gathered together with our family. That's going to be exciting, isn't it? Now, not that you're disappointing us right now, but it's going to be exciting to gather with some people that we haven't been with in a long time, to gather with some people that we've heard about. Can you imagine? It says that when we get to heaven, not only will we know, but we will be known. And so you won't have to introduce yourself to Moses or David or Deborah or Esther or Mary. We could go on. They're going to know you by name, and you'll know them by name. And won't it be awesome to reflect upon that? You know, one of the books I read a few years ago, we offered the book here to a lot of people, is the whole idea of really participating. And in one of the chapters, it was talking about the beautiful work of the Holy Spirit. And the author of this book was talking about what it's going to be like when we get to heaven. And we're going to be talking to these guys of the Old Testament. You know what they're going to be asking us? What was it like to have the Holy Spirit in you and your wife and your husband? I mean, that's a mystery to these guys because the Holy Spirit comes upon, but for us, he's in. And so they're going to be asking you as many questions as you're going to be asking them. It's going to be a great time. Anyways, we'll get there eventually. So God says to Moses and to Eleazar, listen, why is he speaking to both these guys? Number one, Moses is a true shepherd. We're going to learn about that on Sunday. Beautiful story of leadership. But number two, Eleazar is also the next spiritual leader, and he wants you as a leader to know who you're leading. He wants us to represent the heart of God. Now, honestly, I don't know all of you. I don't know all of your names. I know most of your faces. But the Lord knows you so well, and he wants his leaders to, and that's why, you know, in some ways, I always teach about sitting in the same place. But in many ways, that's kind of a healthy thing. Kind of know your area, you know the bald spot in front of you or whatever, you know. I know that guy, you're that guy that, you know, in whatever. But we need to be connected. And so he says, take a census of all the congregation. No pointing right now, please. No pointing. Everybody's going, what about, am I okay? Take a census of all the congregation of the children of Israel from 20 years old and above by their father's houses. Again, stay organized. All who are able to go to war in Israel, okay? So you want to know their father's houses. Why? Because there's an inheritance. Who's going to war? There's soldiers that need to be counted. So Moses and Eleazar, the priest, spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from Jericho. And so they did exactly what we're told. Now, I'm going to encourage you, we are not going to read every word in this chapter. Those of you that are read ahead, you know why I'm saying that, okay? Because we're going to go through this. But a little bit. As we come to the first section of names and tribes, you know, we're going to be looking at Gad, at Simeon, and Reuben, these groupings. And you may recall that the way the Lord organized these tribes, they're in groups of three all around the tabernacle. And they also formed the shape of a cross, just the way they were laid out, okay? If you were to look at them and you're looking down, bird's eye view, you would see the presence of a cross. That's why when Balaam was giving his prophecies, he says, wow, how beautiful it is to see the tents. You know what he really was saying? How beautiful it is to see the cross before us. By the way, the cross is everywhere in the Pentateuch. The cross is laid out where they're staying at night. When they went into the tabernacle, you know, even the way that the high priest sprinkled the blood, you know, it made the shape of the cross. There's blood everywhere, but always giving the symbolic, really prophetic promise of what's going to redeem us. Blood on a cross. So these tribes are coming together. Tragically, these three tribes are on the south side of the tabernacle. And tragically, all three of these tribes, they really decrease in number. This is a tragedy. And may I just say this? If you have a choice who to hang around with, make wise choices. Because who you spend most of your time with will influence you. The reason I say that is because sometimes we don't have a choice. You know, when we were living in Southern California, and the town that we grew up in was an upper middle class town. And by the time Rob and I got married, all the people our age, we couldn't afford to live in our town. But that's where we grew up. And so what we had to do was we had to move into parts of our town that when we were dating, Robin was forbidden to even go there, you know. So in some ways, what I'm trying to say is we didn't have a choice. But if you don't have a choice and you're surrounded by some pretty horrific things, ask God to use it in a powerful way. And while we lived in this one particular house where we moved here, we got robbed twice. One of the times, they literally stole everything in our house, including our toilet paper. They emptied out our freezer, and I went to go call the police. They stole the phone. And then they put everything in our car that was there and stole our car, you know. And, you know, oftentimes we would wake up in the morning and I have to go out in the driveway first. And I'm not exaggerating. There would be bloody knives. And it was just a real rough, a lot of drug dealers in that area. But you know what? God used us. We didn't have a choice in that surrounding. And it ended up, you know, bringing neighbors to the Lord and all this kinds of stuff. So it can flip-flop. But in most times, make wise decisions who you're going to spend most of your time with. So here's this group, and they're on the, you know, the south side of the tabernacle, and they were, they're actually tribes decreased. For example, you know, we see some things, like the family of Reuben in verse 5. What I did in my Bible to help me is whenever they decreased, I made them red, okay? If they grew, I made them green, okay? So that just kind of helps me to kind of go through that, and obviously you can all see that because it's my now electronic Bible, okay? And so if I get lost, you know, back up to the red. Okay, so we have these different tribes showing up. And so, you know, we're talking about the tribe of Reuben. They were in the red. They didn't do so well in their numbers. You know why? Part of it is out of this particular group, it tells us in verse 8, Dathan and Abiram were in this particular group. Those names may sound familiar. These were kind of the guys that were causing a revolt against Aaron and his brother. But it also tells us that the children, verse 11 of Korah, they didn't die. God actually used these people later on. Why am I bringing this up? Even if you've messed up, we have a God of grace. Hang in there. Watch what he will do with your life. When we get to the book of Joshua 10 years from now at this pace, we're going to get to a couple of chapters where Joshua, who's leading, forgets to pray. And one of the times he forgot to pray, the Gibeonites came in and told him a lie, and he bought the lie, okay? They deceived him. Well, as a result, they honored their word, but they said, listen, we're going to honor our word, but from this point forward, you're going to be serving us in our temple. You're going to be the woodcutters. You're going to be the ones. But you know, as you continue to read through the Bible, the Gibeonites become a people of God also. They're listed with the people that are taken off into Babylon. They're listed with the people that come back from Babylon to help to rebuild the city. You know what I'm saying? So if you've messed up, it's not too late. Trust the Lord. You know, here we have the sons, the children of Korah. Some of the Psalms have come out of this family. So beautiful stuff. Then we come to the sons of Simeon. You know, and these particular guys, they actually were the ones that had the biggest loss. About 62% of them by numbers were lost when you compare the first census to the second census, okay? So we continue on. So those guys are definitely in the red. And then we have, you know, verse 18, the sons of Gad, they're in the red. But then we come to the sons of Judah, verse 19. And when we get to verse 19, we see some things. Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, these guys lived on the east side of the tabernacle. And they all showed significant gains during this 30-day period. You know, kind of a net increase of over 2.6% when you look at the bigger picture. But the smaller picture is they were growing. Well, then it reminds us they didn't always have it together. Why? The sons of Judah, verse 19, were Ur of and Onan, and Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. Remember that story? That's the story of Judah. And he had a son who was married to, all right, Tamar, and they couldn't have a child, so he died. The next son goes in, and it's about that time to impregnate his wife, and he refuses to do that, and so God dealt with him. So finally, Judah is deceived by her, and he sleeps with her, and they have, you know, twins. But there's I love the Bible because it's real. It doesn't just leave out the stuff that we leave out in our life story. He says, this is for all of us. We're not perfect people. Well, verse 22. These are the families of Judah, according to those who were numbered, 76,500, which is a growing number, okay? And then we come down to verse 25. These are the families of Issachar, and their number now is 64,300, or they've grown about 18.2% since the last time they were counted. That's not bad. These are the families, verse 27, of the Zebulunites, according to those who are numbered of them, you know, 60,500, all right? Again, they were a growing group. Then we come to the sons of Joseph, which is kind of interesting in verse 28, because, you know, sometimes when we're talking about the tribes, Joseph is named. Sometimes he's not named, but his two sons are named Manasseh and Ephraim. But what's interesting is Ephraim, that tribe, shrunk by about 8,000 during the 38 year. But Manasseh was gained by 20,000, you know? And so that's kind of an interesting thing, how they grew during that time, all right? Now let's drop down to, let's keep going, we're moving now. Let's drop down to verse 41. Now, these are the sons of Benjamin, according to their families, those who were numbered, and they grew by 28.8% during the 38 years. And so, or over 10,000 of them grew by number in that way. And then we've got the families, you know, the people of Dan, Shuham, or the Shumanites, according to those, in verse 43. And their group grew by, you know, 1,700 men, or 2.7% over the 38 years, all right? Then verse 47, we come to the groups of Asher, all right? And again, they were a growing group. They grew about 29% in number, all right? An increase of almost 12,000 over the 38-year period of time. Verse 50, now these are the families of Naphtali according to their families, okay? And now Naphtali, again, they went the other way. They're in red in my Bible. That means that 8,000 of them, well, didn't make it, all right? Or they went negative 15%. So they were 15% smaller 38 years later than when they began, okay? And so then we come to 51, and we have the grand total. Well, after 38 years, the grand total is there's only about 1,820 people different, which is almost not even on the chart. We're talking about over 600,000 people, all right? What's interesting about that is, you know, God takes care of generations. What's interesting is how when times get tougher, it seems like God's people get stronger. For the last 38 years, they're not living in Egypt. They're living in the wilderness. They're wandering. They're not really living with a whole lot of joy, but God can take care of us, even in tough times. And he does, and he continues to do that. It's much like when, you know, in Egypt, God took care of them. They grew from 70 to you know, over 2 million in 400 years, and they're growing again during these tough times. And so though we're coming into tough times, we have been in tough times, don't give up hope. It's amazing what God can do. It's amazing how many products, I'm not going to go over this, but how many products historically have been produced to change the world that were developed out of tough times. So there's a lot of pluses in the midst of all of that. And if you're going through a tough time right now, maybe there's something that God's going to produce that's going to change our world, and you're going to be a part of it. So thank him for that, okay? Well, then, as we look at all this, you know, the numbers and all that kind of stuff, there was a lot of changes. Let's pick up in verse 52. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying again, now that you have the number for the armies, let's talk about the future. Well, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, to these the land shall be divided as an inheritance. And the idea of an inheritance in this section, we're going to hear this word pop up at least 12 times. It's important, inherit or inheritance. I want you to see the heart of God. To these the land shall be divided as an inheritance according to the number of names. To a large tribe you shall give a larger inheritance. To a small tribe you shall give a smaller inheritance. Each shall be given its inheritance according to those who were numbered of them. What I want you to see right here is that we worship a just God. Please hear this. We worship a God who is just. He knows just what you need. I'm not trying to be cute, but he's a God of justice. But we also worship a God who is fair. Please hear this. He's just, and he's also fair. If he was just fair, we would be doomed. I was thinking about this one time, and I was thinking about someday having grandchildren. And the Lord was just talking to me about and the Lord just gave me this image of me drinking, you know, a big gulp and enjoying every sip of it. And he was really talking to me about what kind of a grandfather do you want to be? And in my image, I want to be fair. He says, you know what? If you treat your grandchildren fairly, you will kill them. Because that big gulp given to your brand new grandchild will kill that grandchild. What I want you to think about is being a just grandfather. Keep the big gulp to yourself and give that child what that child needs. And so as these people are coming into the promised land, we're going to see that God is just, okay? The larger people get larger portions. The smaller clans get small, but he's also fair. What do you mean? But the land shall be divided by lot. You see the fairness? All 12 are in there, whatever it was. People think it was pebbles, the same size pebbles. So that's fair that his hand went in. You see the idea? One's just and one is fair. What's interesting about the lot, and I think this is fascinating, you know, God is God. And even though the land was selected by lot, If you read Genesis chapter 49, those lots were already prophetically selected. You can't get one over on God. Now, here's the problem. Sometimes we don't like our lot in life. There was one tribe, the tribe of Dan. They didn't like their lot. They were given beachfront property. And they didn't like that lot. And so they moved to the north. You can go there today. For those of you that have gone to Israel, when you go up by the Golan Heights and you're going up that area, sometimes we stop at this place and sometimes we don't. It depends on the weather. And some of you have been there where there's the oldest walls ever discovered. Over 4,000 years, we believe that Abraham actually stood before these walls because Dan said, we don't like this lot. We want a new lot. So they went to the north. Do you know that it was through the tribe of Dan that idolatry entered in to destroy the rest of the tribes? So the real question is not what's your lot in life, but what are you doing with your lot in life? If our God is just and he's fair, then where you are is where you should be. And what you do with where you are is up to you. He will not abandon you. He will not destroy you. He has a lot for you. Amen? Well, but the land shall be divided by lot. They shall inherit according to the names of the tribes of their fathers. According to the lot, their inheritance shall be divided between the larger and the smaller. Verse 57, what about the Levites? We haven't talked about them. Well, these are those who are numbered of the Levites according to their families, Gershon, Kohath, you know, Merari, the Merarites. Let's drop down to verse 59. Why am I talking about these people in particular? The name of Amram's wife was Jochebed. She's the daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt. And Amram, she bore Aaron, Moses, and their sister Miriam. So what do we have here? The names or the parents of Aaron, Moses, and Miriam. That's why it's important to read these sections. To Aaron, all right, he was the oldest son. Miriam was the oldest daughter, so that makes Mo the baby in the family, all right? But again, as you study biblical history, who usually ends up leading, the younger or the older? Yeah, it's not always, but there's different things. Now, the older was always seen to be the greater blessing because they were given the inheritance and they were to divide up. But it's interesting, you know, and so if you're an older child and you're discouraged because it seems like the younger one seems to have a different, hey, it's biblical, you know. But as an older one, I think there's greater blessing. You know, Howie, who's on staff, she was singing today, she says, yeah, we always used to call the first child the pancake kid. You know, like that first pancake, you just kind of test them, you know. So if you're a first child, you're a pancake. You're the first pancake. You don't eat that pancake, you get rid of it. But anyways, oh, that's bad news. Never mind. Rewind. Sorry, you pancake people. So where are we at? Okay, back to Aaron, pancake person. To Aaron was born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar, okay, and Ithamar. And Nadab and Abihu died when they offered profane fire before the Lord. What is that profane fire? Don't know, not going to tell you because the Bible doesn't. Some preachers will make up great, you know, presentations, but the reality is the Bible doesn't tell us. All we know is it was profane fire, okay? Now, those who were numbered of them were 23,000. So the tribe of Levi, they grew about a little over 3% in their growing. But what else do we have concerning these people? Well, verse 62, they're growing, for they were not numbered among the other children of Israel. Why? Because they had no inheritance given to them among the children of Israel. But again, back in Genesis, the prophecy, you know, because the tribe of Levi or the son Levi and his brother were a mess, they were messed up, okay? Again, messed up people need a Messiah. His father said, when you get to the land, you will be scattered. And again, God redeemed that brother's children when they became a tribe, and they became the priests. And do you know what? When we get to it, they receive not an inheritance of land, but they received 48 cities scattered all around the other tribes. God is so good. He cares about us. Well, let's keep going. Verse 63. Now, these are those who are numbered by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who numbered the children of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan across from the Jericho. So now we have a location. But among these, this is tragic, but among these, there was not a man of those who were numbered by Moses and Aaron the priest when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall surely die in the wilderness. So there was not left a man of them except Caleb and also Joshua. By the way, when all this took place, was Moses and Aaron, were they older than 20 when the rebellion took place? Yeah, they don't even go in to get to the land. Just Joshua and Caleb. Interesting. Well, now they're ready to divide up the land. Well, it came to the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, from the families of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. And these were the names of this guy's daughters. None of these gals get married, as we're going to see. Could it be their last name is Hepher to begin with? I mean, they couldn't get a blind date. Would you like to go with my cousin? She's a Hepher. I don't think so. And then, if the last name wasn't rough enough, no, really, Mahala, she's beautiful. Noah, she's kind of masculine. Hogla, she's a big girl, but she's strong. Milcah and Tirzah. So though their names don't represent their heart, these were amazing, godly women. They really were. And they stood, I mean, I love these women. They stood before Moses. That takes a lot of spiritual strength. And before Eleazar the priest, and before the leaders and all the congregation by the doorway of the tabernacle, and they said, our father died in the wilderness. But he was not in the company of those who gathered together against the Lord in the company with Korah. But our dad wasn't perfect. No, he died in his own sin and he had no sons. Question, why should the name of our father be removed from among his family because he has no son? Give us a possession among our father's brothers. Stop right here. Do you know the Bible doesn't contain every life situation in it? The Bible gives you direction how to deal with life's situations. The most beautiful thing about following Jesus Christ is you don't check out your mind when you follow him. He redeems your mind. He renews your mind. He engages your mind. He wants us to be thinking followers. And so he gives us biblical guidelines how to deal with things. Now, this is something that wasn't given in the law. And I think a lot of the reasons that this stuff isn't given is because God just wants to spend time with us, as we'll see. He wants to have conversation with us. So Moses brought their case before the Lord. He could have said, well, it's not the law, forget you. He said, you know what? Let me go talk to God about that. And the Lord spoke to Moses, you know what? These daughters speak what's right. There ought to be a way. And so there is a way that it's dealt with. And it's dealt with if there's no sons, it goes to the daughters. If the daughters pass away and they haven't got anything, then it goes to brothers or the brother of the father. You know what I mean? It just stays in that line. But there's an answer to this. Again, our God is fair and our God is just. He wants us to be thinking. Use the brain God has given you, please. He's redeemed it for a reason. Well, verse 12. Now the Lord said to Moses, go up unto this mountain, Abarim. And we find out in Deuteronomy, it's the same mountain called Nebo. We've heard of this mountain also called Pisgah. Okay, those three names. And he says, and I want to take you there. And verse 13, and when you've seen it, you shall also be gathered to your people. What's he just told them? You're going to die just like your brother. But it's a beautiful thing to be gathered with your people, as Aaron your brother was. And so He tells them why he's being gathered to his people. And we'll talk more about this on Sunday, okay? We'll come back to this session. Let's drop down to verse 1 of chapter 28, okay? Now he's reviewing the offerings. The offerings, why? It's a new generation, all right? These are new people. Some of them weren't alive when the first teaching was given to them. So he says, listen, I want this new generation to know how much time I want to spend with you. That's what I want you to get out of chapters 28 and 29, how much God longs to be with you. Now, interesting what he says in verses 1 and 2. Now, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the children of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my offerings made by fire is a sweet aroma to me. You shall be careful to offer to me at their appointed times. You know, one of the most difficult things that people have a problem with is tithes and offerings. And the reason for that, I believe the basic reason, is we forget or we don't recognize everything we have is God's. Everything we have comes from our Father. Nothing you have. You are not a self-made person. So, well, you don't know how hard I worked. Who gave you the strength to work that hard? Well, you don't know how sharp my mind is. Who gave you that mind? There's nothing you can take credit for that God hasn't given to you. And then when God says, listen, would you mind remembering me by giving me from my stuff offerings? That's so ridiculous. It's like, I'm not going to give you my offering. Wait a second. Remember when you were little? When you were really little, Mother's Day, Father's Day, how your dad would maybe give you money to buy your mom a Mother's Day present? And did she say, are you kidding me? You should get a paper route. I know your dad paid for this gift. No. They took great delight in receiving the gift that they provided for you to give. It's the same thing when we give our tithes and offerings. It gives our Father in heaven great delight to see you give it. Like, here you go. Like, Lord, I'm responsible for it. I got this for you. Wait a second. In this hand, I gave you this. And he gives you, you know, 10 apples in this hand. He says, would you just mind giving me one apple as a gift? And we go, well, okay, here's a little one. Okay, here you go. And he's, thank you for the, and he's excited. We all miss that. But why are the gifts given? Because it makes us engage with him because he just wants to be with us. It's so simple. How often does he want to be with us? Let's look at this. And you shall say to them, this is the offering made by fire, which you shall offer to the Lord, two male lambs in their first year without blemish. How often? Day by day. He says, this is how I want you to start your day. Every day. Start your day, number one, with an offering of the lamb in the morning and an offering at the lamb in the evening. Might say this, when you wake up in the morning, think about me. At the end of the day before you go to the rest, I'd love to be thinking about me because I'm thinking about you. Well, what about between that? Well, the one lamb you offer in the morning, the other at night. But during the day, offer some ephah, a flour, a grain offering, a hint of pressed oil, all right? Verse 7, and a drink offering. You know what he's saying? Think about me when you wake up. Think about me before you go to bed. And during the day, why don't you commune with me? The elements of communion, which we just had. Daily, I want you to spend time with me. Well, what about this? Not only daily, but especially, verse 9, on the Sabbath day, I want you to spend time with me. Even more time with me. So not only at the beginning of our daily day, but then one day out of the week, really spend time with me. Okay? Verse 11. Oh, by the way, at the beginning of your months, I really want to spend more time with you. Are you getting this yet? Can I say this? He really digs you. Every day, every week, every month, this is so cool. At the beginning of the month, let's hang out together, you know? And then, what about this? Verse 16, by the way, on the 14th day of the first month is the Passover. I want to hang out with you again. What about this? After Passover, after the 15th day, after the 14th day, look at verse 70, and then let's hang out some more. On the 15th day of this month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You shall be eaten for 7 days. Let's just make a special 7 days and hang out some more. I don't know why people don't get this. He just wants to be with us. Verse 26, oh, by the way, also on the day of the first fruits later on in the year, when you bring in a new grain offering to the Lord at your Feast of Weeks, you shall have a holy convocation. Don't even do any work. Just fast and spend time with me. Wow. What about this? Chapter 29. That was pretty quick, huh? Chapter 29, verse 1. By the way, not only in the first month of the year, but also in the seventh month on the first day of the month, you shall have, again, a holy convocation. I don't want you to do any work. I want you just to fast. For it is your day of the blowing of the trumpets. And actually for them, it's their kind of New Year celebration. Okay? Oh, by the way, verse 7. Then later on the 10th day of the seventh month, you shall again have a holy convocation. But this time here, let's take some time to afflict your souls. Don't do any work. And let's deal with some of the things that cause us to be separated. This is the Feast of Atonement. Or another way to break it up is, it's a feast so that we can be ready for this, at one ment. Atonement, at, A-T, one ment. Be at one with God again, because stuff can get and clutter up the relationships. Why? Because I want to be closer to you. Wow. And then, on the 15th day, verse 12, of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation. Then it's interesting, on all these offerings and these sacrifices, in this particular one, there's over 200 sacrifices that are given during this week. That's a whole lot of intimacy that God wants. And what's interesting is on the first day, he has 13 bulls in verse 13. Then you go down, and on the second day, verse 17, just offer me 12 bulls. On the third day, just offer me 11 bulls. On the 23rd verse, or the fourth day, just offer 10 bulls. So you kind of see how the numbers are going down. Go ahead, Patty, put that little chart up and kind of see what's happening. And there's a lot of offering. I don't know if you can see this. So on the first day, 2 lambs, 1 in the morning, 1 in the evening. On the Sabbath day, all right, again, 2 lambs. On the first day of the month, a couple of bulls, rams, 7 lambs. Kind of see how we're going down here, all the different feasts. Then we get the Feast of Booths, okay, or Tabernacles, which we're talking about just now. On the first day, there's 13 bulls, then 12, then 11. See how it kind of goes down. Then on the eighth day, which is the day of new beginnings, okay, is 1, 1, 1, 7, 1, 1. Kind of don't get into the numerology, but just see this point. God really wants to be with us. That's the most amazing thing that you can see as you look at these offerings that God is asking us, that he provides, by the way. He says, here, have a blast. And he does. What's interesting, a typical year for a priest, besides the offerings, the personal offerings that people bring, okay, offerings for worship, or the lambs that were slain at Passover, just a typical year for a priest, he will have offered before God 113 bulls, 32 rams, and 1,086 lambs. I go to R&R meets every once in a while. I think those guys work hard. That's nothing. These guys don't have the bandsaws cutting up. I mean, it's just brute strength. But God really wants to be with us. Every day, every week, every month, every year. Wow. Father, thank you. Thank you for reminding this next generation, you want to be with them. You'll be their strength when they go to battle. You'll be there when they have their new lot in life. May they use it for your glory. And you want to be there with them as they come and publicly proclaim their praise, their desire to be forgiven, and their desire to be loved by you. And then, Father, how can we not thank you that we don't have to offer up over 1,000 lambs a year? We don't have to offer up over 100 bulls a year and so forth. Because, number one, you are better than any high priest. You're better than any temple or tabernacle. You're better than any sacrifice. You are it. You're Jesus, our Christ. And so our hands don't come and have to be bloody anymore. As we begin our night tonight, we can come and we can take of the bread and we can take of the juice and commune with you. Maybe tonight what the Lord wanted to say to you is, how are you doing with your lot in life? Remember, our God is fair, but our God also is just. May we walk in just what we need, that he's just given to us.